Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Gregory Melville and Susan Fox and Kathleen Bromage.
This is Where We Live on Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. This year's gubernatorial race is a rematch from 2018, pitting two businessmen, Democrat Ned Lamont and Republican Bob Stefanowski, against each other for the state's chief executive position. Today, Where We Live, we talk to incumbent Governor Lamont. The economy will be a through line in the campaign, contrasting Connecticut from the time Lamont stepped into office to where the state is today. And while the state's surpluses continue to grow, the local labor market hasn't fully recovered from the pandemic, and many residents are feeling the impact of inflation. How will the new $24 billion state budget just signed by Governor Lamont help them? We dig into the $660 million in tax cuts offered in the plan. And coming up, we also talk about the legislative session that wrapped up and take your calls, too. What questions do you have for Governor Lamont? Here's the number, 888-720-9677. That's 888-720-WMPR. You can share a comment on our Facebook page or find us on Twitter at Where We Live. Governor Ned Lamont joins us now on Zoom. Governor Lamont, welcome back.
Good morning, Lucy.
Now, before we dig in to what happened this session, talk about this new budget, also your reelection campaign, I believe you got COVID, was it a month ago? How are you doing today?
I'd say two things. Yes, I did get COVID about a month ago. And thankfully, because I was vaccinated and boosted, the case was very mild. That said, I took the therapies, quarantined for 5 days, and no harm, no foul, back in the game. You know, a little worried today that you still see the infection rate at a, in double digits. I think it's a bit exaggerated, Lucy, just because people with symptoms are probably the only ones really getting tested. But I appreciate your asking. If I could just say one thing off the top, I was just shocked by the shooting in Buffalo this weekend. Shocked that this young man able to get a hold of military style weapons, military style protective gear, drive 200 miles to target a predominantly African-American group in a shopping center. Shocked that the guard there outgunned. He shot this young man three times trying to protect others, but the bulletproof equipment that this kid was able to get, you know, off Amazon or some such medium, protected him, and this man is no longer with us. And I hope we don't get desensitized to this type of crime and what it means to our community, especially racially motivated crimes. I just wanted to get that off my chest.
No, I thank you for that. I was going to ask you that later in the hour because I believe, was it this January, the State Hate Crimes Advisory Council was formed? And so when we think about what Connecticut can do to protect communities of color from these hate incidents, we're seeing them fueled by supremacy movements found online. What is the role of this council and how can we move forward to protect the residents in our state?
The role of the council is has representatives of different communities, off of racial, ethnic communities, those that feel like they're perhaps most at risk, doing everything we can, A, to give them confidence what we're doing is the state to make sure their communities are safe and work with them and have them work with the police, have them work with the mental health and therapists so that we can head this off before it happens. There's an awful lot of stress and there's an awful lot of crap going on in the social media. And it seems to inspiring a fair number of young people in a really dangerous way.
Mm. And you talked about the fact that people can still get these types of weapons in these mass shootings, thinking about the role this online movements play in this. But, just getting back to my question, even before this particular incident, I believe even during the Trump administration, the FBI has been tracking the number of hate incidents rising in this country. And so there are people in our state who have experienced, slurs being used or they feel they've been discriminated against. And so, how do you make people in the community who've been targeted feel feel comfortable to come forward and also to put out a zero tolerance message in our state?
For one, it starts at the top, and words matter. And the previous president of the United States, after Charlottesville, with all its anti-Semitic and Nazi propaganda, anti-black, he said they're good people on both sides. You can never wink at this. Secondly, I really worry about the social media. I want to make sure we're very strict on that. You know, this young man, he's live streaming and hoping he becomes a hero at the end of the day, at least in terms of that narrow group of followers he has out there. We got to work closely with the social media. And on my side, I work very closely with state police and the mental health folks, state police and municipal police. Make sure we have the most diverse team of police people properly trained. Make sure you give them the, you know, the confidence that they deserve to keep you safe going forward. And as you probably know, Lucy, we made the biggest commitment to mental health we've ever done, starting with coaches and mentors and therapists right at the school system.
I'm glad you bring up the schools. One more before I move on. We think about, again, you know, some of the discrimination that even students face in particular districts, things that are said to them, and the tools you can give schools administrators, again, to put that zero tolerance message forward, Governor.
I would say the teachers, in many cases, along with the parents, are at the front line of this. And empower the teachers, give them the respect they need. These kids are bringing in an awful lot of junk they pick up on the internet, asking their friends what's going on, asking the teachers. Let the teachers teach, let the teachers be counselors, and make sure the teachers work closely with the parents when they see something, say something.
Again, you can join us 888-720-9677 as we talk to Governor Lamont for the hour, again, running for re-election. Again, you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter with your question for the governor. I wanted to just go back to COVID real quick because you know, we heard from a listener, even though we know that vaccinations are readily available, people have been getting boosted. Miriam writes that she feels we've still drifted a little with COVID. There's no mask mandate and on Connecticut Rail or CT Transit buses. Mandate not enforced on Metro North. She writes, no test to treat phone number for Paxlovid like New York City has, or no renewing vaccinate or test mandate for state employees with cases rising and tests available. You know, how to respond to those residents who are still concerned that, you know, cases are rising and not everybody can get vaccinated?
Well, I tell Miriam, first of all, we're prepared. We have the masks, we have the testing, we have the therapies, we have the vaccinations available at no charge to anybody that needs it. I'd go on to say the people of Connecticut, after 2.5 years of this COVID hell, know how to keep themselves safe. And Miriam, or if you live with somebody who's older or somebody maybe with some type of a pre-existing condition, err on the side of caution. Wear that mask, make sure you get boosted. Most of us got our first vaccine, but it could have been 8, 9, 10 months ago. Now's the time to get boosted. We have the ability to keep ourselves safe.
Again, our number 888-720-9677, or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. I talked about this budget that you just signed, a $24 billion budget. I believe you've said that it has it delivers the largest tax cut in state history. The Connecticut Mirror's Keith Faniff said, quote, this has touched off a debate likely to continue through Election Day. He's also pointed out more than half of these tax cuts are one-time installments that will expire by year's end. So how do you respond to that? And do you think in December you'd revisit that some of these should be continued?
Well, A, I'm happy to have the debate. Usually we're sitting around, oh my God, what taxes are we going to have to raise, or what spending are we going to have to cut? We're doing just the opposite right now. If CT Mira wants to say this is the biggest tax cut in Connecticut history or a close second, that's a debate I'm happy to have. It is the biggest tax cut in state history, certainly when it comes to the middle class. Middle class has gotten slammed by inflation, as you well know. The worst tax we've got is the property tax, though that's the one that's disproportionately high. Lucy, that's the one that hits you when in good times and bad, whether you got a job or not, when you're on a fixed income. And so there we wanted to reduce the property tax on your home, reduce the property tax on your car, get rid of the income tax on your pension, get rid of the income tax in your 401k, so those folks on a fixed income can do a better job of getting through this COVID time. And why doesn't it just go forever? You know, much of it does, but some of it doesn't. And I didn't want to do what every governor of my predecessors do, which is leave us in a big cliff in say 2024 and say, hey, governor, you fix it. I want the people of Connecticut to know we've got a budget that's balanced, not just today, but for the foreseeable future. Look, there are some storm clouds out there. I think you see some potential recession in the next year or two. And I want to make sure Connecticut's ready. We can protect our services.
We know that residents are facing the impacts of inflation today. My husband sent me a picture of cereal at CVS for $8 a box, which is pretty ridiculous. So when we think about, you know, some of this relief helping Connecticut residents and it needing to come sooner rather than later, you know, could you have done more in terms of tax relief? I know you said that you didn't want to overstep, but when we think about people's budgets here and the impact on their families?
Yes and no. I could have done even more than the biggest tax cut in history and paid down less of the pension. I could have done more on the biggest tax cut and done less on mental health or less on affordable daycare. But Lucy, the governor is to choose. You have to make choices. And at the end of the day, I have to present the legislature a balanced budget. I think we got a pretty good balance there.
House Minority Leader Vincent Candelora said these tax quotes were a bumper sticker. How do you respond to that?
A bumper sticker that will mean hundreds of dollars in immediate savings to middle-class people right now. And no offense, legislature, you guys have been there for years. And all I ever hear about is how our pensions are going through the roof and nobody knows what to do about it. Let's tear up the contracts with the state employees. You know, I'm the first governor in the history of the state not only to make the contributions to the pension fund, but also reduce the obligations and, you know, saving of $5 billion. You know what that means, Lucy? That's going to save taxpayers $440 million a year for the next 25 years. That's going to allow us to maintain the commitments to the people of Connecticut.
You can join our conversation if you have a question for Governor Lamont, 888-720-9677, or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. When we think about the surpluses that continue to grow, thanks to savings, of course, but also the stock market, all of the federal aid that Connecticut received, how much federal aid is unspent today, Governor? And what are your priorities in allocating that?
We used a lot of what they call the ARPA federal money, which goes for another, you know, 2+ years in terms of extra support for our municipalities, extra support for our schools in particular, make sure we get apprentice teachers and counselors in our school. You know, on the other side of the equation, we're getting from the infrastructure bill, which I think is incredibly important for our state because we have 100-year-old roads and bridges and railroad tracks. That's about $1 billion a year over the next 5 years, and it could be transformative for our state. I really believe that we can take 10, 15 minutes off your commute in each direction over the next 3, 4, 5 years.
Again, our number 888-720-9677, or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. You mentioned the roads. Anthony tweeted that you had a great December 16th executive order directing the DOT to set a target for reducing vehicle miles traveled by 2030. Wants to know 5 months later, what's the target and why is the state DOT still starting interstate widening projects?
Excellent question, Anthony. We got two targets. In less than 10 years, we want our electric grid to be carbon free. We're already well past halfway there. We're one of the leading states in the country when it comes to reducing carbon emissions related to the electric grid. But to Anthony's point, we got a long way to go when it comes to transportation. We're still a fairly car dependent state. So we're slowly moving our automobile fleet and our buses and our moving people to rail, but most importantly, when it comes to cars and buses, moving that to all electric as well, a non-carbon producing. I want Connecticut to lead by example. And it's not good enough for Connecticut to do this by itself. So we're doing much of this alongside, you know, New York, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, California, setting an example for the rest of the country.
Again, you can join us 888-720-9677 or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live as we talk with Governor Ned Lamont. When we think about this budget and, again, the more than $660 million in tax cuts, I understand there's some disagreement that you and some Republicans have with the Democrats over the child tax credit and the expansion of child care programs, you know, worrying about overspending on the state's revenue cap. Can you talk about this?
Well, it's all solved. I felt very strongly the legislature had set the rules of the road for themselves back in 2017. And one of the most important pieces of that was a spending cap and a revenue cap to make sure that when revenues are really strong, we don't spend it all and leave a cliff in the next year or two. We've been very strong, kept to those guardrails, and the legislature has kept to their word. At the same time, I agreed 100% with the legislature and the amazing Beth Bye. Probably the biggest commitment we made, that in mental health, was daycare and childcare. And I'll tell you why. I did it because, A, it gives our kids the very fairest shot at the starting line of life and allows mom and dad to get back to work. Everything I'm about over this next 4 years is make it easier for you to get back to work and to keep our economy going. And our daycare expansion is a big piece of that.
When we think about children and birth, we know that the racial wealth gap in Connecticut is among the worst in the nation. There was this ambitious program signed into law last year. It's been called the Baby Bonds Program. So long-term investments for babies whose birth was covered by Husky, the state's Medicaid program. But I believe 3 weeks after the proponent of this program and the state treasurer, Sean Wooden, announced he wasn't seeking reelection. The program was unexpectedly delayed by 2 years. And so why is your administration supporting this delay? Why was it needed?
Well, again, Lucy, you got to make choices. And for me, affordable housing, affordable daycare, investment in a workforce, these are things that pay benefits today for folks, young and old, who otherwise could be getting left behind in this economy. I want to make sure we can make a difference for them today. You know, baby bonds is a nice idea. If you had more money, that means they'll get $20,000 or so when they turn 18 years from now. I want to make a difference in people's lives today.
So explain that to me more. We think about the rainy day fund as $3 billion. I understand there's another, I believe, $4 billion in reserves. And so when we think about all this money that Connecticut is sitting on, yes, we have long-term liabilities, the pension fund, but thinking about helping, again, figure out a way to minimize this racial wealth gap. If this was a program that could help people, when they, need to pay for school or maybe start a, and get a mortgage, why can't Connecticut be a leader there?
We are a leader there. We provide the greatest expansion of support to help you get to school, ever before, so people aren't denied based upon wealth. We put in place the greatest workforce development. So you're a kid and thinks, this is what I'd like to do. We have 150,000 jobs out there, close to it, that we're having a hard time filling, Lucy, because we're not training people. You want a job in advanced manufacturing, take a 20-week program, which we'll pay for you, and you graduate from there, you could be getting $60,000 plus good benefits within 20 weeks or so. I want to make a difference in people's lives. I think a good paying job is the best way to deal with that racial inequity.
And with this delay in baby bonds for another 2 years, there's no guarantee that, the money will then be allocated for it. And so, if you're reelected, is this something that you're willing to commit to in another couple of years, Governor Lamont?
It's something I'm willing to commit to discuss with the legislature, because they've set in place a bonding cap. We talked about some of the guardrails. So if they say, Governor, I think we ought to take a little money away from affordable housing and do more on baby bonds, maybe that's something we have to listen to. If they say, I want to do less about scholarships to help kids get into a trade school or college, and I want to do that on baby bonds, something I would listen to. I think, my instinct, though, Lucy, is do things that make a difference for people right now.
Again, you can join us 888-720-9677 as we talk with Governor Ned Lamont seeking re-election. He is the Democratic nominee for governor. You know, just 3 months ago, we spoke to his Republican opponent, Bob Stefanowski. We hope to invite him back before November. But let's take some listener calls now. Again, the number 888-720-9677. Christine's calling in from Danbury. Christine, what's your question for the governor?
Thank you for picking up my call. My name is Christine. I'm calling from Danbury, and I work as a CNA, and we help these vulnerable population who are elders, and we don't get paid enough, and we are working really hard. We are getting shortage of staff, and the few of us that work each day, we are getting so tired, and people, the CNAs, don't want to work anymore. So I'm asking Governor, is can he increase our pay a little bit, maybe tell our bosses so we can be able to pay our rent and to provide food for our family with the little pay that we have, please.
Thank you, Christine, for your question. Governor Lamont.
No, thank you, Christine. We got to do more. There's no question about it. I think we had one of the largest increases in pay for working families in general, and in particular caregivers, the state has seen double digits over the last couple of years. I think we've learned during this 2 years of COVID and all the talk about essential workers, there's not really a correlation between how essential your work is when it comes to taking care of people and what the pay is. We've made a good start over the last couple of years, and we're going to keep going. Mm.
So when we think about some of these facilities that CNAs work at, you know, often owned by private companies, so what can the state do to compel them to pay these staff like Christine more?
Lucy, we gave, nursing homes and others the biggest increase ever, and we said we want this predominantly to go to pay and subsidies so more people can take advantage of the service. And we hold them accountable because we regulate them. You know, they are private companies, as you know, so we can't manage this directly. I will tell you, look, I paid a bonus to a lot of state employees who showed up every day during the worst of COVID. I tried to lead by example, and I'd like to thank, those that are employing our nurses who stepped up every day ought to do the same.
Again, you can join our conversation with Governor Ned Lamont. He's here for the hour. Here's the number, 888-720-9677. We're going to take a short break and be back to take your questions.
Support for this podcast comes from Hartford HealthCare.
Elevating Health is funded by Hartford HealthCare. Hartford HealthCare recently celebrated the opening of the Ridge Recovery Center in Windham. Christy Scott, Vice President of Clinical Operations, describes this new state-of-the-art destination for healing.
Individuals will come if they're suffering from substance use disorder and get individualized treatment. They can stay up to 3 to 4 weeks and receive family therapy, individual therapy, group therapy, and lots of other holistic care like yoga, trail walking, acupuncture. So it's going to be a great place for people to come and heal.
For those seeking recovery, finding it close to home can sometimes be challenging.
Many individuals travel to Florida and other states that have more treatment centers, so we're hoping by doubling our capacity at Hartford HealthCare, the individuals can stay in their home state with their family and support systems close by.
To learn more, go to ctpublic.org/elevatinghealth.
You're listening to the new investigative reporting podcast, In Absentia, which means you're interested in getting to the facts and uncovering the truth. If you'd like to help us continue our investigative work, consider making a donation. Visit ctpublic.org/tapsupport and contribute today. That's ctpublic.org/tapsupport. Thank you for being a part of the Accountability Project.
Join Connecticut Public and Fairfield County's Community Foundation for the In-Community Speaker Series, May 2nd, featuring New York Times Magazine journalist Nicole Hannah Jones, creator of the 1619 Project. Jones will talk about her work covering racial injustice and the legacy of slavery on our culture, our politics, and our institutions. The event starts at 6:30 p.m. at District Music Hall in Norwalk. Tickets at ctpublic.org/speakerseries. This is Where We Live on Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. It's campaign season, and today we kick off occasional interviews with candidates before Election Day, starting with the Connecticut gubernatorial race. Our guest today, Democratic incumbent Governor Ned Lamont. What questions do you have for him? You can join us, 888-720-9677. That's 888-720-WMPR, or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Thomas is calling in from Salem. Thomas, what's your question?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. And thank you, Governor, for I think you're doing a phenomenal job. I've lived in this state my entire life, and I talk to many retirees that can't afford to live in Connecticut after they retire. I don't want to leave Connecticut. And I was recently in Michigan, and I saw that they had the same problem, that seniors were leaving, and they made a maximum $5,000 property tax on all seniors, and also their pension and Social Security taxes were waived, and that kept the seniors, which are a huge voting block, and it kept them in the state. And I'm wondering why we can't do more for the seniors in this state.
Hey, thank you, Thomas, and good question. Appreciate your comments. First of all, what we have done for the seniors, as you probably know, is eliminated the estate tax for probably 98% of them. That was a reason for some folks to think about moving out of state. Secondly, as I mentioned before, we've eliminated the income tax, especially when it comes to pension and 401k. So for the vast majority of seniors, there's no great tax reason to go from one state to another. Sometimes that warm weather gets pretty appealing at a certain age, but you're absolutely right. I want our seniors to be here in this community. I don't think you have to watch your grandchild grow up on Zoom from Delray. I'd like you to be able to do it from your home. I'd like to have more downtown housing, single units, condos, make it less expensive and easier for you to be able to maintain a facility here, a place you don't necessarily have to mow the lawn or do all the upkeep. These are the type of ways we're trying to make it easier. We got to do more on the property tax, but it's the first real property tax cut this state has seen in a long time, make a big difference, I hope, for seniors.
Again, you can join us, Governor Ned Lamont, our guest here on Where We Live. The number 888-720-9677, or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Lorna is calling in from New Hartford. Lorna, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, Governor Lamont. And yes, you are doing a wonderful job. Thank you. I'm just wondering, what are the plans for the state building affordable housing? The cost of rents for my three children are astronomical, and they cannot afford to buy a house. They're all in student loan situations. So I wonder, affordable housing, are there any concrete plans to start building them? Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Lorna. And if you were raised in Great Britain, welcome. I'm glad you're here in Connecticut. That's wonderful. Affordable housing, as I said before, is absolutely key. It's key, as I was telling Thomas, in terms of our seniors. Let's say Amazon was looking at the state of Connecticut, and one of the things they said was, you got some nice housing out in the suburbs, but it's pretty pricey. I'm trying to get housing for 20-somethings. That's how I'm going to be able to get my company growing with that type of talent. So there are a lot of really important reasons to get our housing up. I strongly believe we ought to do this locally. I'm trying to give our local towns and municipalities all the incentives they need to get more housing, especially in the downtown areas, especially near transit. I think that makes an enormous difference. And we're putting our money where our mouth is to get this done. It's a jobs issue, and it's a fairness issue in terms of letting our seniors stay in the state.
I know you've mentioned on the show before that you think it's a local decision, and you mentioned the state trying to offer more incentives to get local towns to build more affordable housing for young people. But I'm wondering, when we keep talking about locals having, you know, more of the control, and how that limits the amount of affordable housing projects that even show up in towns, especially in Fairfield County, Governor Lamont.
Yes and no, Lucy. I would tell you, we've got an awful lot of NIMBY, not in my backyard, but we also have some YIMBY, yes, in my backyard. So we have more housing being built, for example, in Stamford and Norwalk and even in Bridgeport than we've ever had before. But I think every town ought to do its fair share. Look, I'm down here in Greenwich, and we pay a big premium because our teachers, our firemen, and our cops can't afford to live here. So you have to pay an extra premium. And that's not good for a community either. You want the people who work in your community to be able to live in your community. So they're in the process of putting together a 5-10-year plan to show exactly how they are going to get to their 10% affordable housing obligation.
It's interesting. You listed some of the cities that have projects going to offer up more affordable housing. Obviously, companies are attracted to cities. But for people who don't want to live in the city but want to find affordable housing, say in New Canaan or Darien, what can we do as a state to compel them to build those affordable houses, whether it's multifamily homes or apartments that people can afford, Governor Lamont?
Well, Darien is building housing right now in the downtown area. Much of that is affordable, and they're no longer subject to any of the incentives. For example, there's the 830G program. So you can exempt yourself from that. All you have to do is show us your plan and how you get to more affordable housing in the near term and the long term. So I think it's working, but to be blunt, it's not working fast enough. It's hurting our economic opportunity. And you want to know why you have extraordinarily high price of housing? Because for the last 30 years, we haven't built housing. That's less about NIMBY, more because a lot of people just weren't looking at Connecticut, but they're looking at Connecticut now. They want to move to Connecticut. Let's make it easier and more affordable for them.
Again, you can join us 888-720-9677 as Governor Ned Lamont joins us for the hour. Sheldon's calling in from Woodbridge. Sheldon, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Governor Lamont. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a retired dentist, and I always cared for people. And I get the impression that we don't care for people enough today. We talk about the economy all the time, and it's extremely important, and we have to get people upward bound. But I'd love to hear your take on all the lies that are professed and all the hate that goes on in this country right now from some of the right-wing radio stations and people. It's just driving me crazy. It's not the America I grew up to love in the 50s. I'm in my 70s, and I'm really distraught that I'm in a bad country right now. And I'll just listen to you, Governor. Thank you.
Well, I'll be a little more optimistic than that, Sheldon, but I am shocked. I am shocked with the level of discourse you hear coming from Tucker Carlson and others. There's a racial tinge to it. I'm shocked that more people aren't standing up and saying, this is wrong, this is not America. Look, my parents were old-fashioned Bush Republicans, to be blunt about it, and this was not their Republican Party either. They really pulled things way to the right. I will say, as a retired dentist, people have convinced me loud and clear how we had to make sure that dental care was a basic right of each and every one of our citizens. I remember down there in New Haven, people lining up for, hours on end at 6 a.m. back when dentists probably like you were providing the free service on an optional basis. Now we're making sure that we reimburse and it's available for all of our people.
Again, you can join us 888-720-9677 as we talk with Governor Lamont. To Sheldon's point, a lot of some of the rhetoric that is being said in our country, even in our state, is not true. And, there have been calls, especially since the murder of George Floyd, for more people to call out racism when they see it. And that's how we can move forward. But there's also this rhetoric that we're seeing in communities across our state, even around the topic of critical race theory. We've seen it compound in certain communities. We've seen it impact school board meetings. So what can our state do when we think about how this conservative playbook is also still alive and well in Blue Connecticut?
Speak up. I mean, as a young person, I know when your friend says something that's racial or homophobic or anti-Semitic, there's sort of a tendency to just look the other way because you don't want to get involved in something. Yeah, get involved. We need people to step up. I'll tell you, Lucy, I was really honored, 6 weeks ago, went to Israel, went to Yad Vashem, which is the Holocaust Memorial. Frankly, I was the only WASP in the group, and walking through, I was devastated. Each and every one of those victims of the Holocaust had a face and a heart and a story. And as I walked out of there, I just remember some of the CRT, critical race theory, people are saying that, hey, you're making too big a deal out of the Holocaust, or you've got to teach both sides of the Holocaust. Really? What is the other side? I don't know what that is. I'm speaking up. Lucy, you're speaking up. I'm glad to see that others are as well. We just got to remind people how important that is and get off the social media. There's more hate-filled rhetoric there, and it's tough to shut that down.
I believe there's a particular PAC that is making critical race theory a campaign issue. You know, how are you prepared to respond?
That's really sad that there is a pack out there with $1 million and they're going to take away a woman's right to choose. They're going after, gay rights and CRT in general. I'd like to think the people of Connecticut, A, know me, know my heart, know where we're at. I've got to stand up every day. And to be blunt, I need you or more importantly, because you're a journalist, your listeners to stand up. And when they see something like this, when they hear something like this, don't let it go unsaid. When January 6th happens, don't just say, oh, gosh, it was a bad day. Hit it hard. That's not America. And that type of insurrection is wrong in our country. It's not going to be tolerated.
Again, you can join us 888-720-9677 with Governor Ned Lamont today here on Where We Live. Jim in Barkhamsted. Go ahead, Jim.
Good morning. Thank you for this show. Governor, thank you for your leadership for the past several years. You've done an awesome job. Thank you. I'm growing increasingly concerned about the teacher shortage that seems to be looming in Connecticut and wondering what we can do to stave that off.
Thank you, Jim. Let me take an extra 30 seconds on this. We have a shortage of workers across the board, and that's everything from daycare providers to nurses to therapists, and as Jim says, teachers. Construction workers, we're going to be doing $1 billion a year of construction. And I think my number one priority over this next 4 years is to make sure we get people back to work and make it easier for them to get back to work. You've heard me on transportation. You heard me on workforce. Another thing I think we ought to do is make it easier for a teacher to get in the classroom. Maybe rather than spending 3 years at a teacher's college and aggregating all this debt, and then you go into the classroom and you got to start slowly paying it down. Cut the amount of time you're paying tuition, to a teacher's college, and expand the amount of time you're an apprentice in the classroom. You're earning money instead of accruing debt. And let me tell you, we need those apprentice teachers in the classroom right now, taking care of kids, a lot of whom are stressed out after COVID. And I'd like to think that 90% of them are going to be there for the long term. And finally, just respect people for the work they do. There's a lot of folks who are the teachers and they just are coasting. Nonsense. They're the most important folks in our society. They're the folks that are generating, educating the next generation of talent. Look them in the eye and just say thank you. Mm.
When we think about the burnout that educators have experienced, I know New Haven is short 100 teachers. There's protests in that city for the need for funding, mental health support. Is this a priority for the state?
I'd say it is. I mean, your term, we provided $500 million extra a year to our schools across the state, making it easier for them to start hiring now. And put in place what they need. We're putting in place clinics in the overwhelming majority of our schools, clinics that can take care of not just a bee bite for folks who need a little bit of a shoulder to lean on, some confidential counseling. I mean, you can't put everything on the shoulder of a teacher in the classroom with 20 students they've got to manage. Mm.
But when you think about the conditions in the classroom, as you just referenced, and earlier your point about making it easier to get back to work, sometimes it's not just that. It's also people's pay, and they want to be paid more for the work that they're doing, for them to continue in these positions, Governor. How do you respond?
Yeah, pay matters. I mean, We put in place the first $15 minimum wage a few years ago. It almost seems a little quaint now, Lucy, in the sense that restaurants really can't hire even at $14 or $15 an hour to get the people there. When it comes to teachers, they've had a significant increase in pay, they should, because we provide money to the superintendents. The superintendents make the call on how much of that goes to the teacher or other services within the classroom. But right now, they have the resources to do it right. And their work has got to pay. I mean, I made a deal with the state employees. It was about a 4.5% a year for the next 3 years and a bonus for this first year, really. And I'm having a hard time hiring people. A lot of people think, oh, these state employees, boy, they really have a heck of a deal. You kidding? I'm losing folks at the Department of Transportation every week. They're going to some consulting firm that pays them a 40% more. Then the consulting firm leases them back to us and we pay a premium. So you bet. We're making sure that work pays. I want you here in state government doing the people's work.
Again, Governor Ned Lamont is our guest here on Where We Live. We'll continue taking your calls after a short break. Here's the number, 888-720-9677, or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. You're listening to Where We Live on Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. My guest today, Democratic incumbent Governor Ned Lamont, here to take your calls as well. The number 888-720-9677. We've been able to talk about the budget that you signed as well. We've heard from listeners who are pretty supportive of your first term, Governor Lamont. But I wanted to touch on some scandals within your Office of Policy and Management. From the firing of the former deputy secretary over a federal investigation into hiring practices to complaints filed over the alleged mistreatment of his boss, Melissa McCaw. Can you tell us why she ended up leaving so abruptly? Did you lose faith in her at OPM?
No, I think very highly of Melissa. We worked together closely. She always said we had a very good relationship, and I reciprocate. She came out of Hartford. They had a bankruptcy. She inherited a state that was on the edge of what could have been something similar. We had a $3.8 billion deficit. I said, Melissa, no pressure, but I want you to get this budget balanced. I want you to balance it honestly, and I want you to balance it without any tax increases, no broad-based tax increases. And by the way, I got it presented by early January. So she got the job done. For that, I'm very thankful. She did have a deputy to OPM. The deputy was, I had to dismiss him. There was just some alleged conduct that I found absolutely unacceptable, and he's gone.
You mentioned, again, Costa Diamantes, who ended up, you said you dismissed him. He says he resigned. But on school construction issues, this is something that the projects that he led, he was the gatekeeper. And so should there be some transparent accounting of the condition of these schools? So one man or politician, so no one man or politician determines what gets funded versus a need? This is from our investigative reporter, Jacqueline Rabe Thomas, Governor.
Look, I think so. You know, more importantly, we got school construction back to Department of Administrative Services. We were going through each and every one of those school construction things with a fine tooth comb, going to hold people accountable. We actually have 100 auditors in the state of Connecticut. They do the same thing, going over each and every one of these as well. I've got to do everything I can to give people confidence the money's being well invested. And for me, this is more important than ever now because there's some federal money coming in, especially when it comes to transportation. I can't have a lot of people saying, oh, my God, everything's corrupt. Don't let them do it. I want to show that we can invest this money appropriately, and make a difference for the state of Connecticut for years to come.
Before I take some more calls, I had referenced complaints filed over the alleged mistreatment of Melissa McCaw. What can you say about that in terms of, you know, how members of in your administration are treating women, especially women of color like Melissa McCaw?
Well, let's start with the fact that we have more women and more women of color in our administration than any administration in history. That was incredibly important to me. We worked together very collaboratively. Hey, look, it's sort of tough sometimes. You don't always agree. People can go back and forth. But I'd like to think that overwhelmingly we work together very well as a team. And I'd like to think the people in Connecticut could look up at our administration and say, that could be me someday. There's somebody just like me up there.
Again, you can join us, 888-720-9677. Rich is calling in from Vernon. Rich, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Governor Lamont. The first thing I'd like to do is say I think you're doing a fantastic job, and you got my vote in the fall, and I wish everybody would see that. One of the things I have a question about is criminal reform, and it's a few-part question. Do you know that 98% of people on the sex offenders registry aren't working? Do you think that's a good thing? And is it cost effective, and does this program even work? I know it's been under investigation, and the legislature is thinking of doing something about it, but every time it becomes election year, it seems to be a off subject. Thank you, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Hey, thank you, Rich, and appreciate the comments. We did the most significant crime bill and criminal justice reform in a long time. The crime bill, we did this on a really bipartisan basis, for which I am very thankful. To be blunt, especially when it comes to young people, I'm doing everything I can to intercept what could be bad behavior, dangerous behavior, and get them on the straight and true, give them the support they need, give them the treatment they need, give them the job opportunities they need, give them some hope before they go another direction. And that's what we've tried to do in this criminal justice bill, along with adding on more police on the beat. Your question was specific to sex offenders. You know, obviously that's a much more complicated issue, but I do believe in second chances. So you gotta be very careful with this category of individual in terms of type of work they do, where they could be. But is it a lifelong sentence for something that happened at the age of 17? I hope not.
Again, you can join us. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live as we talk with Governor Lamont. Nita's calling in from New Haven with a question on the car tax. Go ahead, Nita.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I actually moved to Connecticut from Washington, D.C. for a job in 2020. And I was surprised when I got my property tax bill on my car. I bought a new car when I moved here, as I didn't have a car before in D.C., and I paid a tax, I registered my car, and then there was this property tax assessed on my vehicle. And I guess my question was, you know, it just seems like a regressive tax on middle-income and low-income people. Are there, you know, any considerations to maybe eliminating that tax, like the neighboring states don't have that tax?
Thank you, Nita, for your question. Go ahead, Governor Lamont.
Yep, good question, Nita. Good move, moving up from Washington, D.C. I like to hear that. Look, the car tax stinks. I admit that. We've done the first significant reduction in the car tax in many years. It's easy to say, why don't we just get rid of it? Okay, if I get rid of that, how do I make that up? You can raise taxes a little bit on houses. We've given a lot of support to our municipalities. I'm really pleased that over and above what we did on the property tax cut and the car tax cut, overall mill rates across the state are going lower, making the state just a little bit more affordable right now. I'd like to think what we're doing on the car tax cut this time, which ought to save you a few hundred bucks starting this summer. We're just getting started.
We just have a couple of minutes left. You know, I wanted to mention, you know, there are a number of lawmakers who announced they'd be leaving after this session for financial reasons. I think most people know it's a part-time legislature, and if you don't have another job like an attorney, it can be tough to be a legislator. You self-financed or self-funded your 2018 campaign for governor. I believe you're doing that again. And so, you know, what can you say to people who maybe grow frustrated at, you know, the barriers for people who can't self-finance, Governor Lamont?
Well, I don't think they're leaving the legislature because of the cost of a campaign. We have one of the most aggressive public financing systems in the country. And I do think that being a part-time legislator, trying to hold down a job at the same time you're doing what was we thought was a part-time legislative job is becoming increasingly full-time is very complicated for a lot of people. You know, the good news is we have a lot of turnover, and I think that's good. I don't think we need this to be a lifelong career. Bad news is I think some people are leaving for the wrong reason. You know, Matt Ritter and Vinnie Candelora, the Republican Democrat in the House, got together, got a raise for our state legislators up to, I think it's $40,000, first raise they've gotten in probably 20 plus years, trying to do a little more to make this a balance that people can maintain. Do your civic duty as a legislator and also take care of a family.
And you mentioned they're not leaving because of the campaign finance part, but we did talk with Senator Haskell. You know, he did mention that, you know, the financial reason is one of the reasons, you know, he's leaving the General Assembly. You know, again, encouraging younger people, people who may not think about becoming politicians, to want to be in the public service. What more can we do, Governor?
There's some truth to that. I also point out that my great friend Will Haskell has a beautiful fiance in New York City. So I think there's a variety of reasons why he's stepping back at this point. You know, you want to know what I would do? I think we've learned over the last couple of years that you don't have to be in the building every day for every single vote and every single hearing. I'd make it easier for our legislators to do more remotely. That allows them to keep a good paying job without totally interrupting the entire day. Probably the leadership and the chairman ought to be there if there's an in-person hearing as well as an online hearing. I'd give a little more flexibility in this day and age.
That's Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont. As usual, we've run out of time. We've still got a lot more to ask you. We hope you come back soon, Governor.
Thanks, Lucy. Thanks, everybody.
You've been listening to Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Today's show produced by Katie Pellico. We'll be back tomorrow.